Hi everyone and welcome to the Tech Recruitment Podcast. This is the episode number, the next one, so let's kick it off. These days it's super important to get candidates interested in the job opportunities because the IT job market is so saturated, right? And a Java developer from Poland can work for any company, not just in Poland, but also in Western Europe or even in the United States. So also the HR managers have really challenging job these days. They need to make sure that the vacancies and job opportunities stand out in one way or the other. So what would be your suggestion on how they can make the vacancies and the job opportunities stand out?
Wow, starting with the $1 million question. I love it. First of all, from my observation, it's definitely the case. As you know, I've been traveling over 35 countries, working in organizations globally, helping companies to come together to boost their culture, their performance. And I often talk to HR people, right? That's my clients. I remember recently I had a conversation with one of my clients, an HR person, and she was sharing that she posted a job ad for a technical position. And after a few weeks, she got seven applications, right? Mm-hmm. What you're talking about, like the developers or tech talent is so wanted. They're so on demand. Salaries are crazy high, right, compared to other industries. And so there's so much power into the employees. So what do we do to get them attracted to join our company as opposed to any other company out there, right? And sometimes you cannot compete on the paycheck, right? Because at some points you can, some companies can, but I don't know, if you're a smaller company, a startup, or you're not McKinsey or a big, large corporation, it could be really, really tough. I don't have the magic answer, the one secret that will change your recruitment experience, but the topic that I want to explore with you is the topic of culture and investing in your culture, creating a culture that people want to join and be a part of genuinely, right? Not just using it as a recruitment tool. Yeah, we have a great culture, but actually building a culture that people want to be a part of. So that's the topic that I'll be happy to explore more and maybe share some good examples if that's would be relevant for your audience.
Yeah, that would be super cool. And with culture, obviously, lots of companies start with the core values, right? They have a management brainstorm to figure out what the core values are. Then they create a list of these values and the HR managers start including them on the job descriptions, but they may not really live and breathe those values, right? So how do you go from this kind of management exercise to really like living those values and presenting to candidates in some like real way?
So first of all, that's what usually happens. It's a management exercise. But the most forward-thinking companies make sure that they include people from all levels of the organization when they're crafting the values. When you're a small startup, it's much easier, right? You're 5, 10, 20 people. You can go to a team offsite. You can have a bunch of exercises. You can talk about these things. Amazing. When you're a large organization, it could be a little bit more difficult. I'll give you an example. Chris Robbins, he was a former CEO of Tele2, telco from Estonia. So he loves to do transformation with companies. When he joins a company as a leader, the first things he does is, I want to make sure we're on the same page when it comes to values. So he would go to the company and he'll talk to people and say, hey guys, who are in the case with Tele2? Who are Tele2 kind of people? Who are people who really incorporate our values? Martin, Maria, Peter. Okay, cool. He brings these people from all levels of the organization. And he pushes them to go to a team offsite themselves, right? It could be the cleaner. It could be the receptionist. It could be the manager, right? He gets them together, and now they have to talk about, who are we really? What is our DNA? What do we stand for? Values are not just something you put on the job ad. This is a decision-making tool. These are our principles. This is what we believe in as an organization, right? So once you craft them, It's not just, all right, done. Now you can put it on the job ad. No, you got to live it on a daily basis. It has to be a buy-in from the leadership and then all levels down on the organization. But first, the leadership, right? If one of your values is we're always punctual, and then the C-level executive manager, whatever, is late for a meeting twice this week and there's no consequences, then that's not a value that we live. This is a BS that we put on the webpage, right? So the first step, whatever way you want to do it, is to come together. If you can include and involve as many of the people as you can as part of this experience to craft initially your values. And that could be a process. Often it could take, I don't know, 1, 2, 3 years to really get them, nail them, not just what are the values, but how do we language them so they mean something to us? And I would say, because I've been crafting the values in my team for a couple of years, and finally we nailed them, you know, 6 values. But then at some point, more people started joining the team. And in my mind, it was like, yeah, man, one of the values is productivity and ownership. Clear, right? It wasn't clear. So you have to come down and really boil them down. What are the behaviors within our culture, within our company, that when we do them, we're living the values? Right? Like specifically, what are the exact, you know, as bullet points? And you have everybody to contribute to that discussion. And we agree upon that. This is who we are. Now, when you're hiring somebody, of course, you're going to add it to your job ad. When you have an interview, you will talk about it. You lead people through. And this should be a commitment of the leadership, commitment of the HR. Hey, we're only bringing people on board who are fitting our culture and who can live our values. Very, very difficult. Very difficult when you have a scarcity of talent when it comes to IT tech talent. Super difficult, right? You have to make compromises. But can you actually afford to make a compromise? Because when you do, right, and you hire the negative Joe who is a good developer, can you actually control how they're going to impact the rest of the people that they collaborate with?
Yeah. So, well, that's really a tough one, especially because of the talent shortage on the IT job market. I mean, you can have a great developer, finally someone applies, and the guy may not be really, I don't know, punctual, right? And if the core value is to be punctual, then what do you do, right? Do you reject? Well, that's usually the hard choice. Yeah, but that's, I guess, what separates the really great companies that put the core values, you know, on the top of the priorities list. So thinking further, like what are some ways on how the HR managers can include these values on the job descriptions? Like, do you recall any like interesting examples that you could walk us through?
Let me think about it. I'm not sure I have some extremely good examples, but like on top of my head, but I remember a company that's doing it really well, and maybe people who are listening can go check out theremotecompany.com. The company that built products like MailerLite, and their co-founder, Ilma Tiki, recently actually published a book talking about how they build a culture. And think about their remote company for 10 years plus, before Corona and everything. So they not only put the values as part of the job statement, but as I recall, they ask you as part of your assignment to do something. For example, you know, MailerLite is a competitor of MailChimp, right? So they're doing these newsletters, emails, and so on. So the person who is applying, they need to, for example, do a newsletter, like using the platform. Mm-hmm. But when they do the newsletter, you can observe, right? Like the HR person can actually see how they're acting, how they're writing the copy, what are they doing, right? So I think without having a really good example to share, it's the HR person, the recruiter, has to have it as one of their checklists, you know, because they usually have a checklist with, do they cover the skills? Are they motivated, right? One of the checklists should be, are these people believing in the same things? Do I see any red flags culturally, right? The same person, Ilma, she shared with me this story, which I think is a very good example. So because they work remotely, initially they decided we're going to meet every year for 1 or 2 months. We rent a house in a nice place like Bali. We come together, we live together, we work together, right? Workation. And they get to know each other. And then the first time they did it, she figured out, I don't want some people from the team to be around my kids. Oh, wait a second. Why did we hire these people? Oh, because we can afford them and they were really good. Yeah, but if I don't want them to be around my kids because they have a negative impact on my kids because of their personal traits and values, what do we have to do? So they had some discussions and they had to let go of these people. And that was the moment that they decided, we're not doing that. And, you know, maybe an easier way, because again, we're talking about shortage of talent, an easier way is to think about, what are the never tolerate kind of values? What are the anti-values, right? Like, what are the things that if somebody has these behaviors, it's toxic and we can't keep them. We can't actually hire them. And it could be difficult to spot people because everybody's trying to present themselves with the best possible energy, right? But you know, when you make it a commitment and when leaders of the organization, once again, I'm coming back to it, are living the values of the organization, they're the living example of the values. If somebody breaches the values, there is consequence, right? Sometimes we don't want to talk to the people in the company that are peak performers, and they might be, I don't know, negative, or they are late, or they spread negative energy, I don't know. But we don't want to do anything about their behavior because, hey, they're doing their job, they're performing. But that's rotting the culture. Yeah. And culture is what will attract a lot of people, right? We're talking about values and purpose. Like, why do you exist in the first place? Values is on one side, but the mission. Why are we here? You know, people want to join companies that has purpose. And everybody's listening to Simon Sinek and read the book Start With Why. And it's more of a cliche now, but it just works. It's practical. When you believe in something and you get people who believe in the same thing, right? If maybe it's the technology, man, it's the impact that the technology is bringing to the world, right? But then people are excited, they're engaged, they want to do stuff. I was talking this morning, you know, recording this session for a conference on employee engagement, and I shared with you prior to the podcast. Mentioning an example with a company from Germany called Plan A for the Planet. So they are in the business of combating climate change and raising awareness around climate change. Well, in other words, supporting companies to decrease their, you know, negative emissions to the environment and all these kind of things, right? But I had a conversation with the CEO and the founder of the company, Lyubomila Yordanova, kick-ass female founder, and I asked her, how do you grow so fast? She said, well, what do you mean? I mean, when you have to hire so many new people, how do you find these people, right? A lot of technical people. And she said, we don't have to. Okay, what do you mean? Well, and by the way, there were 100 people last year. I just read a couple of days ago, they raised 24, 27 million round. And now they're more than 240 people, maybe hiring more. Okay. Wow. It's like, how do you get so many top level people? And she said, we don't have to. Because we have a waiting list of people who want to be part of what we do. The mission, right? That's what we do. That's, you know, we're changing the world in our way. We are making an impact positively. People want to be part of that, especially the younger generation now, right? They want to be working for something that has meaning, that has purpose. And coming back on the culture and values, it's not just some fancy words. It's how do we operate? Literally, how do we operate? How nice and positive is the vibe? How are people treating me? Right? Part of the culture is do I know what are my priorities? Is my management and leadership clear enough to tell me these are the top three things that you got to do? Do I have the freedom? A lot of the younger people, tech talent, they want to have flexibility, right? Some people wake up and start working at 11. But that's fine as long as they get things done, right? Do you create this structure in your organization where people can feel, I can be myself? I have the support of the HR and the management. And because when you start building that and you invest resources in that, people talk. Developers know how to develop, right? People talk and they're like, man, you got to come and work for us, you know? Because this is such a cool place. People treat you well. You know, you can get breaks if you're feeling tired. People invest in you. Learning is a big thing, by the way. I had a conversation with the first chief HR of LinkedIn. He was hired when the company, you can check it out. My podcast is called Productivity Mastery. His name is Steve Carrigan. He was hired when there was LinkedIn was a growing company, but 400 people. And then they grew the company to 4,000 people in 3.5 years. I can imagine the craziness, right? How do you compete? How do you compete with the mastodons of the tech world of like Google's and I don't know if it was Meta back in the day, no idea. But how do you compete with Microsoft, right? When they can pay much bigger salaries, right? And one of the things he shared, a few things he shared, but he shared one of them is you give them ownership. He said, hey, you can make decisions. You can actually have a major part in the code. You can take ownership, right? We will be there for you. We invest in your learning and growth. This is a big one, learning and growth. If you don't incorporate learning in your job description, in your employee experience, right? Sit down with the person and say, look, part of your benefits, part of your perks, we're going to invest in you. Like, what are the skills that you want to learn? The hard skills. What are the people skills and management skills you want to learn? We're going to invest in coaching. We're going to invest in courses. We're going to invest in these kind of sessions that we do. We will do a lot of team offsites. Like, people love to learn, right? I mean, simple example from my small company, right? I'm a consultant. I'm the company, right? Like, I'm delivering workshops, speeches globally. I have a team of several people who believe in my mission. It's our mission, right? They're part of it. Like, it's not my company, but I'm the face, right? So we work remotely. Now, personal development and learning is one of our core values. And one of the practices we came up with, which been super successful, we call it personal development hour. So every week we spend an hour and a half. One person from the team is leading a session connected to personal development. Like, nothing connected to work. Could be this week somebody did a session on emotional intelligence. We did a test together. We had a discussion. Last week we spoke about habits and how do you build habits. So we created this spreadsheet and everybody's putting their habits there. We're tracking them daily. We have this accountability thing. 3 weeks ago, I did a session on time management. We talk about time management. How can we improve that, like, personally? So I don't know what practices will work for you. Another company I coached recently, a startup from Italy, because they have developers in different places, and it's 10-15 people company. They do this practice called green coffee practice. I don't know why they call it green coffee, but basically every week you are put together and you have to have a virtual coffee for 15-20 minutes with one person of the company. It's part of your job, you know, like, hey, you and Michael set up a call and have coffee, right? It's company time. You pay for, like, personal development hour. It's company time. I pay people to join, right? What can you do in your company so you can invest in your people, in their development, in their growth? And again, it's a commitment from the management as well. Sometimes it's not bringing an external. Sometimes it's about part of the time that the manager needs to spend is not only operational, right, but the leadership side. Maybe sometimes you need to spend 45 minutes to talk to your employee, Michael, because Michael is not feeling well. And that's not in the job description, right? It's like, hey, Michael, how's it going? Let's spend an hour. Let's talk about it. I see you're struggling at the moment, right? I mean, simple stuff. Everybody knows it, man. Feedback. People crave feedback. People love feedback. We're afraid to give people feedback. They love it. Positive feedback. But actually, there's a lot of studies that show that people love constructive feedback. If you're only giving them the positive, they think something is wrong. They think it's you're hiding something. You have to create a culture that feedback is allowed. Because when you do that, people will start opening up and actually give you feedback as well. People are afraid to give feedback, especially in Eastern Central Europe. Because we have this hierarchy, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to tell my manager that he was really bad at that meeting. No. I keep it quiet, man. I just do my job. That's not how you create a culture that people want to join, right? So all this simple stuff, man. Mm. Clarity of expectations. You know, when somebody's coming, look, this is the job position that you're applying for. Let me tell you, it might change a little bit. We might throw you into different projects. How do you like to work? Let's personalize your experience. Everybody's different. You know, I don't know how many people I talked to that told me the same thing. Like, I literally had like 7 different podcast guests, one after another. Everybody said the same thing. Leadership is personalized. I spoke to Chris Williams, who was a former vice president of HR of Microsoft. He worked directly with Bill Gates. And he repeated it 3 or 4 times. Leadership should be individualized, right? Every person is different. We like to say it's a team sport. He said that. We like to say it's a team sport. Is it a team sport? It is a team sport, maybe. But you have to approach every person that you manage individually because people have different needs, different motivations. And it has to be a commitment of the company to care for people, you know, creating development plans, but not just top down. Hey, we want to grow you as a manager. And in 3 months, okay, dude, you didn't ask me. You know, the thing is, look, man, I have so much insights because my job is I'm the guy they bring on board to help companies solve problems from the people side, okay? So I work a lot with managers, but I also often get hired to talk to employees. And they share with me their problems. And it's the same stuff. It's the same stuff. I'm not given feedback enough. It's very hard and I'm overwhelmed because I have very different priorities and my manager is messy. I'm not doing what I love to do. People don't ask me what I love to do. They just throw me projects because they need to get done. How about you have these discussions? You know, when you're splitting roles and responsibilities, you're not really focused only on what people are really good at, but you have a discussion and say, hey, what motivates you? What do you love to do? You know, look, for the next 3 months, you still have to do this because we need to finish this project, but I'm committing that I will find projects that you can do 30, 40% of the time focused on the things that you want to develop and grow into. I mean, imagine having a company that majority of the time that people spend is focused on the things that people are not just good at, they love to do it. They're excited and passionate. They can't wait in the morning to wake up and just, hey, man, let's move. I mean, simple stuff, man. Mm-hmm. It's simple stuff, but the problem is we don't do it consistently.
Yeah,
it's common. Knowledge is not common practice, right? Like everybody knows what should be done. Everybody knows that. Are you committed? And it's a long term. That's the problem. You're not going to get the results tomorrow. You know, you're so busy. HR people are so busy. Like, I mean, honestly, people don't realize how busy HR people. How much work, how much demands is on there, how many expectations. I mean, everybody who's listening is an HR, you know, people department. I mean, seriously, guys, you're doing an incredible job. So much work you're doing. Like recruitment, processing, legal, contracts, all the, it's crazy. Okay? So it's difficult, but can you make it a commitment? Can you make it a commitment that investing in our people is important? Investing in our culture is important. Making small steps, you know, start small. Choose one practice. Involve the people. You know, I was talking to another great guest on my podcast, John Rennie, who's a former nuclear submariner, meaning he was on a nuclear submarine, American one, during the Cold War. Wow. And then now he's teaching leadership. But after his 5 years in the Navy, he, I don't know if it's called Navy, the submarine stuff, but he's been a manager in many different industries, including production industry. So he'll be a manager on the production. And I mean, maybe some of you who are listening are manager on production. And he came up with this strategy because he realized I don't really know what are the challenges of the people that are on the production line. You know, if I go and talk to them, I don't really get it. So he decided, he committed every Friday, and he calls it Fridays on the floor. Every Friday from 8 to 12, I'm going to go and work on the production floor with the employees. I don't care if I'm manager. Let me put my ego aside, and I'll work, you know, with them. And he'll change the different roles every week, but he will be down there. He's like, you can't imagine how many things I learned. What are their problems? What are their challenges? What are they struggling with? And you gain the trust of people, right? Because you're there with them. Like, a little bit after, there have been all the management who buy into this strategy, right? So they'll do this on a Friday. I mean, there's many strategies. There's many different things you can do. There's a company with a Bulgarian co-founder. It was called Limplum. They got sold, I think, to CleverTap a couple of years ago. But when they were building the company as part of the, you know, designing and crafting the culture, was they believed in, and I think it was called Big Talk Lunches. So they pick 5-10 people from the team, from different departments, right? And they buy them lunch, and they give them like a ball with questions you can pick from. So you pick a question, and the question could be something like, what is your first memory of success? Or who was a mentor or a teacher that you really admired and why? So they put them together, people from different departments, and you just talk, you know? Mm-hmm. And the co-founder, I listened to an interview with him. He said one of the secrets of success in an organization and a team is you make people like each other. You build this trust by making people like each other. They don't have to be friends, but they have to like each other. What do you do in your company to make people like each other? I spoke to the cinematographer, director of photography, Shane Hurlbut. Again, you can check it out on Productivity Master in my podcast. Shane Hurlbut is the episode. We talk about leadership. He was a guy who shot Terminator Salvation. He shot Need for Speed, major blockbusters, right? One of the top Hollywood cinematographers. And ask him about leadership and what are his challenges as a leader, right? And just to give you an idea, on Terminator Salvation with Christian Bale, he had to lead 250 people just in the camera department, you know, lighting people, cable, you name it, grip, all the different people. It's a lot of people, you know, and it's very, very tense environment, very short deadlines. So ask him, what are your leadership challenges? And he said, my biggest leadership challenge is to make sure every person from my team is making the same movie. Let that sink for a moment. In your organization, is every person from the team making the same movie? Is everybody on the same page? Is marketing and sales and operations and tech on the same page and making the same movie, working towards the same vision? By the way, we spent 20 minutes with Chris Williams, the former vice president of HR of Microsoft, talking about vision. He was given the task for 6 months He was given the task to figure out what makes a project successful. He went and spent 6 months just going through all the different projects and all the ones that failed, all the ones that succeeded. And he said at the end, it was one common factor. The projects that win had a very clear vision. Everybody knew where we're going. It was very clear and concise what we are after. How many times we don't give any perspective for our employees where we're going, right? Clarity. And then you build it backwards. This is the vision. All right. These are the goals for the next 3 months, the most important goals. Let's talk about your individual priorities on the team. Where should your time go? What are your individual priorities on the project? This and this. Okay. What percentage of your time and energy should go into these priorities? 60%, 80%, I don't know. Okay, we're on the same page. Let's go. Let's move. These kind of things, man. It's not rocket science, but it's a commitment.
Well, you uncovered so many very interesting areas, and I don't even know which one to follow up on first, because there were just so many different aspects that you dived deeper to. And it just kind of triggered lots of ideas also in my mind on what we should do better in our company. So it's just like I'm taking notes as we speak, or as you speak.
Just to give here one very simple thing, because as you said, maybe you're like, where do I start? I want to give you a tool. So our methodology, the perform methodology, is exactly done for that. Right? So there are 7 areas. Purpose and value. P stands for purpose and values, right? Perform is the acronym. Purpose and values. Second area, effective planning. Third area, roles and responsibilities. F for focus and execution. O for optimal energy. R for robust communication. And M for mental toughness. Now, what I want you to do, Michal, is sit together with your team, block an hour and a half, and ask everybody, explain them what each of these areas means in a team context, and then ask them to vote and rate it. And say, hey guys, being completely honest, from 1 to 10, what grade would you give us as a team in each of these 7 areas? Okay? Purpose and values. I don't know. Somebody says 4. Somebody says 7. Somebody says 9. Okay? They do it anonymously first, because you don't want to bias them. And then you sit and you have a real talk. All right, Michal, why did you put a 9 on effective planning? Maria has a 4. What do you mean by 9? Well, I think we're very clear. This is okay, Maria, why do you think it's a 9? It's a 4, sorry. Well, I never know what the plans are. Maybe you guys on the executive level understand it. I have no idea. Interesting. What do you think you should do, or we should do, so we can go to a higher level? You can rate it higher. And you have a real meaningful discussion. We've done that with more than 500 teams across Europe and globally, mainly across Europe. Startups, banks, you know, corporates, doesn't matter. You uncover where the gaps are, and you talk about what are the specific things that you can do currently at this stage with the resources that you have. And what is the one area? Because you can't solve it all at once. What is the one area we should focus on just now? Maybe it's planning. Okay, we need to be more clear. All right, let's commit to a half a day strategy session. Amazing. Let's do that. Maybe it's execution. We are all around the place. Cool. What do we have to say no to? Let's have a look at all the projects and let's say no to things or postpone and delegate. I don't know. Optimal energy. We've been so overwhelmed. Okay, what can we do to improve the well-being? There's a company in Bulgaria. This is a little bit of an extreme example. It's called Fast Track. I listened to a podcast with the founder, CEO. So they believe people who exercise perform better, and it's also good for them. So if you work for the company, it's mandatory for you to spend 1 hour in the gym, company time. If you don't go to the gym once, you get a warning. If you don't go twice, you get a warning. Third time, you're fired. They have a gym in the office. They have a shower. So one of the 8 hours you work, you have to exercise.
So every day?
Every day. 5 days a week.
Wow.
Now, I'm not saying that's That's something that that's every extreme. Person that's listening needs to take to heart. This is an extreme example, but it's also an example. You know who you are. When you define your values and culture, this is what companies are struggling with. They try to be politically correct. Transparency, integrity, honesty. And then you talk to the employees, it's like, nobody's honest, nobody's transparent. It's like, no, don't be politically correct. Who are you really? Okay, 90% of people probably not going to want to work for this company, or 80 or 60. But this 10, 20%, man, they'll be committed, you know? You find your tribe. And then, again, we're coming back to the shortage of talent, right? It's really difficult. But long-term, the more you do that, the more you're going to attract more of these people, right? So, but yeah, perform, man. Perform. You can find it online. You just get the freaking thing. You go to my webpage, stoyanyankov.com. I think you can find and download the exercise for free. Just sit down, have this discussion. And based on that, okay, maybe it's the planning that we need to focus on. Maybe it's the culture side. I don't know. What can we do? Then you start researching, you get people on board to contribute with ideas, you commit, and you implement.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, this is super important, especially, you know, in regards to the knowledge versus practice, right? We all, you know, listening to this podcast, we may have the knowledge, you know, but then when it comes to executing these things, we are like, oh, well, you know, we have some more urgent things to do, and let's serve these clients, and then you kind of procrastinate. So the practice itself is important, and
you know what's one of the most common phrases I get when I do a management workshop on time management.
Mm-hmm.
One person from the room will come to me and say, "Stoyan, I love your workshop. These tools are amazing, very practical, very good. But I don't have time to plan my time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get it. We're so busy. I'm so overwhelmed. I don't have time to plan my time." And I'm always like smiling. I'm like, when was the last time you planned your time? Because maybe the fact that you haven't planned your time is the reason you have no time. I don't know. This is common thing, man. Everybody knows I need to have a to-do list. And this to-do list should be smart, should come, you know, what are the long-term goals? What are the priorities? And then based on that, you prioritize the things that matter more. You don't just make a list of 30 unrelated items like budget, email, leads. Like, okay, that's not concrete, man, right? Follow up with leads. Okay, hello, lead. I just wanted to follow up. Check, you know, task done. No, you don't want to follow up with the lead, right? Productivity is all about being clear. What is the end result, right? In anything you do, if you're recruiting talent, what is your end result? You always start with the end in mind. And then you build it backwards. You know, do sales. That's not an end result. I can spend 18 hours doing sales and maybe call two people. How about you're more measurable? What are the activities that will generate highest impact per time unit? Okay. What is the end result we are after? And maybe your end result is to get a kick-ass developer with this seniority level and this salary from Slovakia. Okay, that's your end result. Let's build it backwards. Let's brainstorm all the different activities that you can use to get there, right? Maybe there are 17 different things that you do. You do Facebook ads and you do referral program and I don't know. There's a book called The One Thing written by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. Again, another great person who I had on the podcast, Jay Papasan. Podcast called Productivity Master if you guys want to check it. The one thing, these guys are hardcore business people, okay? So they built one of the biggest, if not the biggest, real estate company in the world. More than 250,000 employees. But they also write books about their business philosophy. The whole book the whole their business philosophy is based around the concept of the one thing. And maybe for recruiters listening, that could be the most valuable thing from the whole conversation. When you are posting a new ad, you have all the different strategies and ideas of how you can attract more applicants, top-level applicants, okay? The question you want to ask yourself, in this case or in general, is what's the one thing you can do such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or necessary? What's the one strategy with the highest effectiveness, okay? Maybe that's asking my employees for referrals. I don't know. But based on your experience and data, what's the one strategy? And can you actually double down on this strategy? Instead of doing 17 different things and having no space to really focus on any of them. I don't know. Just thinking. I mean, think about it in anything in your life, man. If you can apply this thinking on a daily basis, what's the one thing I should do today that will have the highest impact on my life and my business?
That's a good one. That's a good one indeed. Well, I'll start using it right away. I'll check this book on Kindle. That's a good one. You know, so that's the great advice to check this one. And also the previous book that you mentioned. And of course, definitely the podcast of yours, you know, the Productivity Mastery. Listeners should check as well. So, I mean, it's great that you covered all of these aspects on what companies can do to improve the values and really live them and not just do the management exercise. And then eventually communicate on the job ads so that the best candidates get attracted to join the company. So, the job of the HR or recruiters is really hard these days. So what would you say as the last advice before we wrap it up? Like, what would be the last advice on, you know, how to get more people interested and excited in joining some of these companies? Once they probably go through these exercises, you know, they start communicating. So what's the one thing, you know, to use this phrase, you know, that you would suggest the recruiters do to attract the top talent?
It might sound a little counterintuitive, but the one thing I would recommend every recruiter to do is to step up their game in personal time management.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are overwhelmed and often they go to the office and they start doing stuff. So my recommendation, block 20 minutes in your calendar on a daily basis. These are 20 minutes that are not operational. It's strategic thinking. You look at your day, reflect on your day. You think about what did I achieve? How productive was I? How did I go on the meetings and everything? And then the important part, you prioritize your next day. You make a list. David Allen, the guy who wrote Getting Things Done, another guest on my podcast. This is the Bible of productivity, quote unquote. He says the problem is your mind doesn't have one. Right? You can't think in your head. You can't prioritize in your head. You need a system. Get a freaking notebook, get a spreadsheet, get an app. I don't care, one place where you can dump your brain. Let me have a look at tomorrow. How many interviews do I have to make? How many job ads or whatever I have to do? How many meetings do I have with employees? Okay. And then organize it. The simplest way to do it, you capture everything, all the different tasks and meetings and projects. Step number two, you group them. Okay. This is all related to this job ad. This is related to the employee experience. This is whatever. Okay. I have six kind of areas I have to focus on tomorrow. Okay. What's the next step? What's the outcome? What is the outcome of this activity? The outcome is not to follow up on leads or whatever. The outcome is to
get three candidates.
To get three candidates. I don't know. Get three top candidates on interviews. Maybe that's your outcome. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then on this step, you start brainstorming. What are the things that I can do to get the outcome? And often it's different than what you initially thought, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you start saying no to things. Step number four, you prioritize. Okay, these are the five or six objectives I have for the day. How much time is everything going to take me? Write a copy of a job ad. I don't know, 2 hours. No idea. Okay, 2 hours. This is 1 hour. This is 45 minutes. If I spend one hour with you here on this podcast, I can't spend this anywhere else. I committed, right? But I only have limited amount of hours. Okay, so what are the core priorities? And I'm using colors usually. It's like yellow, orange, red. Red is the highest priorities, right? Highest impact. And then I have a list of all the things, very organized in terms of the results I want to produce. And the most important step is schedule stuff. Okay, writing the copy for the job ad. 1.5 hours, 2 hours, whatever. From 9 to 11, I block it in my calendar. I have a meeting with myself to write the copy of the job ad. Okay, and you start blocking your calendar. Now, we all know that next day is not going to be completely exactly how we planned because things will happen. But when you do this, when you have a list of your objectives and you make the draft of how you plan to spend your day and you commit to it, when something urgent happens, you can move things around really easily, right? And you will be feeling free because the secret to productivity is to commit to doing one thing at a time, fully commit, you're fully present. And that type of system allows you not to feel stressed about everything else because it's already in your list. It's you take care of it. It's this kind of a subconscious kind of thing. Like, I don't worry about my next meeting because I already prioritized time to prepare for it. So, awesome. Focus on your time management, guys.
Awesome. That's a really great one. I mean, a bit counterintuitive, as you said, you know, at first, but now it totally makes sense because, you know, without prioritizing the work, we may miss the one thing that would really bring more candidates through the doors. So that's a great one. Awesome. And you mentioned the ebook or the PDF that people can find on your website. So what's the URL again, please?
So you can go to my webpage, stoyanyakov.com. Obviously, if you were looking for some support, external support, I would be really happy to come and do a workshop, do a session, even discuss working on a program with you guys. That's what I love to do, been traveling in over 35 countries, putting programs for teams. My webpage is stoyanyakov.com. You can go to Amazon and find our book with a lot of strategies around that. It's called Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success, the Perform Methodology, with I think over 50 different cases and examples from different companies that you can get inspired by. And just drop me a line. I'm very easy and approachable. Stoyanyakov, find me on LinkedIn, drop a line, say hello. Let us know what you thought about the podcast. What was the one thing that stood out for you? And if you like this podcast, obviously subscribe to the podcast. You know, share this podcast with a friend. Subscribe on Apple. Give a review to this handsome man here. He deserves a positive review. And if you enjoyed that one, feel free to check out also Productivity Mastery podcast.
Definitely, I'll link the podcast and also your website in the comment section below, so that people can connect with you. And awesome. Yeah, well, thanks a lot for sharing all these insights and tips and the books and everything. I mean, I just have lots of notes in my paper book. So I'll go to, you know, meet our team and do the Perform exercise as well, because it seems to be, just from what you were saying, like really a useful one. So thanks for sharing. And guys listening to this, don't forget to plan your day tomorrow, dedicate 20 minutes. And thanks, Stoyan, for being a part of this podcast.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. See you. Hi again, and really quick, if you'd like to get a new job as the tech recruiter, or if you'd like to start working as the independent freelance tech recruitment consultant, or if you'd like to start and grow your own agency, we can help you get closer to your goals. So just go to our website, techrecruitmentacademy.com, and learn more about the programs that we organize every now and then. So just go to the website, techrecruitmentacademy.com.